It's living hell.
This is what real hope looks like. This is the word that those hopeless people need to hear. This is the word that 3,000 people that try to commit suicide today, the 3,000 that will try to commit tomorrow, 3,000 that will try to commit on Monday, this is the word that they need to hear, is that there is hope.
It's real superpower. It's hope. There's hope. It means hope.
Welcome to Victims and Villains. This is the show where we talk nerd, we talk hope, and we speak nothing else. I am your host, Captain Nostalgia, and we are here live at Flood City Fest in Johnstown, Pennsylvania. I have one of the most unique sounding bands that I have heard thus far at the festival. Please help me in welcoming. This is Orly, this is Kavina, Christina, and Monica. How are you guys doing?
Good.
Pretty good.
Yes.
Awesome. Fantastic.
All right, so who's the main? Who's gonna be main spokesperson? Like, I guess we'll go through Christina. Okay, cool. Everyone points to Christina, so I guess it happens.
Oh no!
So you guys have a really interesting dynamic. Tell us a little bit about how the creation of the band got started.
All three of us are primarily vocalists, not instrumentalists. So we kind of leverage that, and then the instrumentation kind of falls into the background. But yeah, we've known each other for years, and we've been friends for years, and we've been singing together for years. And one day we were just like, we should just do this. We each had written a bunch of songs, and when we were singing them together, it just sounded really good. So that's kind of how it all happened.
So you guys have a really interesting dynamic, and I want to kind of grow to that, like you talked about, like, you know, being vocalists, but kind of introduce what you guys do for the band so that way our listeners can kind of understand the interesting dynamic, because I don't really know how to describe it in other ways. What about you?
Our dynamic. So I play ukulele, guitar, and our shaker / foot tambourine, and sing, like, and then there's Christina, she plays ukulele sometimes, and then Monica plays electric and uke and the shaker. Oh, and you do the shaker.
Yeah.
You do, we switch instruments. It's kind of cool. It's a lot of fun.
Physical instruments.
Yeah, physical instruments.
Yeah.
Three we're vocal
heavy,
harmonies.
We're heavy on harmonies.
Yeah.
We
that's our strong suit.
Definitely what we do best, I think.
So I say that, you know, like you talk about, like, it's musical instruments, you guys exchange a lot. You guys are writing and kind of, you know, in the studio creating new tunes. How do you guys kind of decide who plays what part for the song, the single, for that particular moment?
Yeah, I think usually you have, if you're writing a song, you have a little bit of a vision of what you want it to sound like, and, but as soon as we get together, it kind of just happens. We're not afraid to tell each other, oh, this is going to sound good, and that's not going to sound good, or... that's kind of what we do. We just bounce ideas off of each other, and if it sounds good, we go with it. If it doesn't, we scratch it.
So you guys, when talking about sound, you guys kind of have this feel of bluegrass, but, like, folk at the same time?
Yeah, we would love for anyone to figure out our genre. Right now, we have no idea. Kind of just us.
So what are some of the influences? Because I would imagine that, you know, playing everything that you guys do, checking all between it, writing processes, and not only that, but you guys harmonize together, like, just a sunrise. It's so beautiful. So tell us a little bit about some of the processes as far as trying to defend the genre, like you're talking about, you know, being able to, so mixing so many different genres.
There's a band that signed to Community Records called
Sirens.
Oh, Sirens. And they play ukulele, and it's two girl vocalists, and they harmonize. So that was kind of our inspiration. And then also, like, who was it? Like, I don't know. Like, there's somebody else. There's, like, Julian Baker a little bit. Not really.
don't really know what who else.
I feel like this is kind of funny, but we all sort of grew up in church, and we always heard harmonies because even if you're singing with him, you know, there's gonna be harmonies in it. And I think a lot of times we have a lot of our harmonies through the star experience at a young age, kind of thing. So. Just our own life experience. And we're around so many DIY bands that I think we've picked up just different, without knowing, picking up just different pieces from different bands.
Yeah, yeah. Common Folk too, was like a huge influence from us.
They're
two of our really good friends from, we're from New York, so they're from the DIY community there. And I think for me, they had a lot of influence. The kind of songs that we write, and also just why we do it, which is really, I think, like, that's like the central driving force. All of our music is just like the reason why we do that, and it's Jesus at the end of the day. Like, ultimately, we want to bring some sort of hope to people through our music.
So I have to ask this because one of the reasons that you guys stand out to me is that it's rare music to, at least in the DIY scene, to see. So was that kind of something that all of you guys had prior to starting the band, or was it something that let me teach you how to play this and I can incorporate this?
The first song that was written was Stacking Pistachios, and it was written on you. So that's just kind of how that started. We're like, we're just keeping you for everything. And that's how that got started with that. Yeah.
All right, so we're a show that we do, you know, the marriage between pop culture and social definition, and you know, there's a lot of music that's considered pop culture, in my opinion. It's music's a language that you can connect with anyone, be different background, whatever have you, just still connected. But one thing that I always like to ask of bands that we interview or guests that we have on our show is there seems to be a lot of stigma around mental health and suicide prevention and depression. In your personal opinion, why do you think that the stigma around such issues exists? Since you answered last time, I'll start with you.
I think mental health in general is something that's not tangible, and so it's not something that you can quote-unquote prove. And, just speaking from, personal experience with suicide in my family, I know a lot of people who were affected by it, didn't quite understand what was going on in the person's mind, and that itself caused a lot of hurt and anger, and I think just, not fully understanding what leads up to it. I saw a statistic, I don't know how accurate this is, but I saw a statistic, something like 90% of people that commit suicide suffer some sort of mental illness. And I think that's really important that we start to understand it a lot better and are open-minded to listening to people share their experiences. And just because you can't see something happening doesn't mean that it's not actually happening behind the scenes.
A tough question to answer. Give me that.
It's something that you can maybe never see coming, you know, with suicide as far as that goes. Some people are at this level from, on a scale from 1 to 100, you don't know how long that person's been at 99 and, what's going to make that breaking point go to where they just decide to take their life. And, I struggled with thoughts, and I just, think back to the Bible, it's just all about Romans 12:1, do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. And you just have to renew your mind, because for us, like, Jesus already has my heart, but then, like, it takes, like, more power, like, power of a sound mind. You just kind of have to, like, trust on God if that's something that you believe in, you know, and, like, build your strength from that. And, like, it's a hard thing to go through, and I would never, like, belittle anyone that's going through that. And, like, it's important. Like, that's why community is so important to us, too, just to be able to, like, share these experiences, share our thoughts, share our feelings. And it's important to always just, like, reach out if you need help. Like, people are here for you to listen, always. Like, I don't think anybody is going to ever turn their back on you and just walk away and, like, discredit anything you're feeling. So I think it's just important to just reach out.
Yeah, I would say communication. If you have never struggled with mental illness, or you've never had a tough thought, which I think is nobody, know that because you don't always understand it, doesn't mean that you can't listen, and it doesn't mean that you can't love that person. And if you can't be the one to help them, then you need to create a community where they can be helped and where they can be loved and supported. And sometimes you really just need somebody to walk alongside life with you. Just a challenge, and myself included, challenge myself to just love on people in a way that they know they're not alone, and that they don't need to figure out this life on their own. Because that was God's heart. That was Jesus' heart. You know, He's a God who's with us, and He's a God who loves community. And I think that's what the church is. And so if you had a bad experience with the church, find a different one, or find somebody who, you know, you can see the just their genuine love for others, because that's what Jesus is about.
All right, so since everyone has made voted Christina the spokesperson, we talked about the sound of the band, the writing process, and the kind of the formation of the band, but people listening to this right now, they want to be like, this sounds like an awesome project. Where can people find you online?
It is orlee.bandcamp.com. Orlee. orlee.bandcamp.com. We're also on Facebook, and we're on Instagram, at Orlee Band on Instagram and on Facebook. You can just search Orlee, and we're there. And that's where you can find our music.
Thank you guys so much. It's been a pleasure. I love doing, like, music fests like this. It's very rare we get to do stuff like this, but I love hearing new music, and you guys have a fantastic sound, so keep it up. High fives.
Guys out. Thank you.
guest that we have, Mr. Christian Will, appeared on our YouTube channel last year with a poetry video of sorts, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a video of poetry.
So you're a spoken word artist, man. So I got you guys could catch your set today at Blood City Fest. Great set, man. But I noticed something about the way that you move in and out of poetry and conversation at the same time. So tell us a little bit about kind of how you got started and how big you were.
Yeah, when I was in 10th grade, I used to rollerblade a lot, like street skating and stuff. And one of my favorite pros, he had some videos with this guy, Sage Francis, an underground hip-hop artist. Some of his songs in the videos, and one of those songs had the spoken word artist, Shaw Williams, featured on it. And me and my neighbor like was really into that verse, so like we looked him up on YouTube and found this thing called Deaf Poetry Jam that HBO used to do, Russell Simmons. And so we found all these like spoken word videos, and we were like, oh, we're gonna write poetry, it's cool, you know. And so I just started writing, and then like immediately, like long story short, went to a poetry cafe a few months later for the first time, got even more subjected to like actual spoken word, and it just kind of made sense, so I kept doing it. So yeah.
So walk us through kind of the writing process for your poetry. It's not too often that we get spoken word artists here, so I think you might need to be the first.
As far as like writing and stuff, it is happened a lot of different ways. I think there's something to keeping into practice of something, you know, like just for the sake of it, just practicing it. But most of the time, the stuff that I tend to think has something to it is not stuff that I've necessarily purposely written. A lot of the stuff is stuff where I've just had an idea and I just started writing and it just like happens, you know. And then inherently with a lot of that stuff, you write it and then afterward you realize that there's a lot of stuff in it that you've been trying to figure out for a long time that you now have words for, you know. You read over it after you write it and you're like, oh, that's what that is going on inside of me. So a lot of the stuff that I tend to think is good is stuff that is just poured out, you know. But there is, I do think too, there's a thing to like, if you see a value in something, keeping to that. And so like, try, if you think there's a purpose in not being redundant, then, you know, if you ever see yourself using the same words over and over again, I think it's good practice to like make yourself go back and say and go, all right, well, how else can I say this? Because then in not allowing yourself to just go, oh, I'll just use the same words over and over again, it makes you have to think about, well, how do I think about this? If I say it this way, is that truthful? If I say it this way, is it honest? If I write it this way, is it accurate? And it makes you actually consider what you're communicating and like how you feel about it, you know? So yeah, so a mixture of like purposeful and not purposeful like writing. Yeah.
So you have a really interesting feel to your live sets. Your live sets are, you know, the additional poetry, and for those of you listening right now, like poetry when it's in a written form tends to be a little bit shorter, unless it's an epic poem. And then you have like spoken words, you know, for like Chris Burns score and we got the poet, just to name a couple. They are 7 minute like little masterpieces. I noticed like today watching your set that there's this tendency to like ebb and flow out of like the this is the poem and this is gonna be the poem for the next 5 or 6 minutes, and then there's a pause, and then it's almost kind of like this conversation between you and the audience, and then forward right into the poem. So kind of balancing with the act of like, you know, evangelism and poetry and conversation. How do you formulate your live sets?
Well, so an interesting thing is how, because I used to be involved in the slam world, which is a lot of people know spoken word as slam poetry. It's just, a slam is a competition in which people do spoken word and get judged for it. So right when I started doing, like within the first few months, I got heavily involved in the slam world, and that is a very, like, competition rules are all, like, you have to write 3 minutes, and, like, you can't go over or else you get penalties. So, like, I learned, you get up, you do 3 minutes, you get off. Even in, like, open mics, it's kind of what you do, unless you have a feature. But when I started doing stuff in the music scene, I started having, like, 20 minutes to do whatever I wanted. And the first time I wrote this one poem I have, and I didn't have an intro, like I didn't have a beginning of the poem. I just knew that there were things I wanted to say, but I couldn't figure out how to write them and lead into what I had already written. And so I was just like, you know what, I'm gonna have these few things that I kind of want to talk about, and then I will do that, and then I will just start the poem at this kind of weird point that isn't the natural beginning. And so through that, doing that poem, I learned how to, like, kind of how the thought, like, how to connect the pertinent thoughts in my head to the actual structured writings. And so just through the practice of, like, doing that, and, like, you know, like, I use an I Am Sam sample I have for a few years now in my set, and that's just, I was sitting one day, and I was like, I recall stuff about that movie that, like, meant a lot to me, so I went back and, like, found the one clip, and I sat and watched it on YouTube, and I was like, this is insane, like, this holds so much weight to it. So I worked that in, and then that being in there had so much thoughts, like, I had so many thoughts in reference to that, and so I was like, okay, well, I can do that and lead into those thoughts, and, well, now I'm using this song with one of my poems, and it flows really well. And so you just, like, learn how to do that, and then also trying to learn how to, sometimes there's stuff on your heart, trying to learn how to be honest and truthful in that and in communicating, but also not getting carried away with thinking that you have to say certain things. Sometimes it's good to just do the poems and let them speak for themselves, you know. So yeah, it's just inevitably trying to be honest, I think it brings you to trying to have conversations with people as opposed to just performing at them, you know. So yeah, I guess it just kind of forms itself based on what's going on in my head at the time. Yeah.
And so it makes for this really both electrifying performance you get, because there's just an energy about you during the set. But not only that, but it also makes it more approachable and powerful in that regard. So I really did appreciate, like, that. Like I said before we started recording, we knew each other last year, and, like, we were kind of friends, but, like, we hadn't really worked together, and so, like, I really had an appreciation for poetry as great as I do now, so I really do enjoy it. Bragging for a second. But, you know, this is a show where we talk about mental health and pop culture, so we talk all of the above, but one thing that we like to do when we do this live podcast recordings is mental health has this stigma around it, this ugly shell when it talks about depression or suicide prevention, suicide or addiction. But why do you think your personal opinion that stigma in the first place?
I think there's a lot of fear and anxiousness inside of us, and especially when you deal with like depression and things like that, it's really hard. I mean, yeah, when you're insecure or like you deal with depression or whatever, your mind tends to cling to these like things, you know, and it's really difficult to get out of those things, and so you can get really discouraged or really depressed or sorrowful and feel like even sometimes, like, I'm not good enough, like, I don't matter. And so I think that's the thing. I think that's the thing that affects everyone is a feeling of, like, well, I don't matter. Like, what, or sometimes just even not noticing you're dealing with things at the time you're dealing with them. You know, it's hard. You know, when you're blind, you can't see what you're stumbling over, sort of thing. But then on the other end, unfortunately, there's a lot of people that, I think even with anger, like, if you see someone who's just really angry person, we're quick to be like, oh, that guy's an a-hole, but that person's angry, like, they don't want to be angry, you know, when you were growing up, you didn't want to hate someone, like, that was not what's inside of us, or, you know, it is, but it's not also, and so, you have a bunch of people who are like, oh, well, if you're not, if it's not easy for me to be around you, or if you are not acting in a certain manner, or if I'm irritable so I don't feel like dealing with you, you just need to be quiet and not present yourself that way. As opposed to like, oh, well, maybe the reason this person is angry is because there's an issue in their heart, or maybe this person's depressed because they have something going on in their lives. Or, you know, it's just like, we approach people so momentarily, and we don't want that. We don't want to actually deal with things. We just want to not have to deal with them ourselves, you know? So we give off this thing that unfortunately then feeds into the fear of, no, just keep it to yourself. Yeah, and then also just people not knowing. That's one of the things I love about music and poetry and art and, you know, all video games. Like, it's when people can formulate stuff in such a manner that it then gives words to things that you didn't know. You know, my whole life I was blind, and I didn't want to be blind, but I also didn't know what blindness was or how to not be blind or how to deal with things. And so when you don't know how to deal with things, you're just frustrated. But, you know, when someone goes, like, you, like, it can get figured out, and someone is like, hey, so, like, when someone deals with relationship issues, they know there's an issue, but they don't know why, they don't know how to handle it, they just know they get into relationships, and it's destructive, and it's depressing, and it's, yeah, and it's just raw with darkness. And then everyone's like, oh, you have relationship issues. And it's like, oh, cool, wow, that's something, I guess. But then one day someone goes, hey, you have trust issues. And all of a sudden it's like, whoa, trust issues? Well, what are trust issues? What does that mean? And then you figure out what that means. And then you go, okay, well, what does that apply to my life? You know, and this is all stuff. It may even happen in a split second. And then out of nowhere, you're like, man, I didn't have a good relationship with my family when I was a kid. And it's when someone goes, like, yeah, just a lot of times I don't think we even have, like, know the words to be like, this is what's going on. This is why this is an issue. And so there's just so, you know, all those different things that happen with this one issue that makes it really difficult for us to, like, figure out and get a hold on it and deal with it and care about it. And, yeah.
I know it's an heavy question. It catches people off guard all the time. But we're going to link in the video that you just watched last year in the description for this episode. But aside from that, where can people find you online and follow your adventures?
Yeah, Facebook, my name's Christian Welch, on that. Bandcamp is where you can listen to stuff. Bandcamp, I even have a SoundCloud if you can find it. Yeah, it exists somewhere. But yeah, Bandcamp is mainly what I use for, like, audio. I started using Twitter and stuff. Yeah, and you can find me and ask me for my email and my phone number and all that jazz. Yeah.
All right, man. Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, cool. Awesome.
24. 24 is the number of hours we have in a day to share God's love and shine His grace. Yet I wake up in the morning and I go to a place where we're all competing to win a pointless race. where numbers are placed on our heads and people around us cut down the things that are said, where there are three. Three people who won't talk to each other based on drama that never even happened and isn't even true. True. Two. Two people who are insecure in their work and anxious about it because they can't get help from the one. The one person who controls the business, the money, and our livelihoods. We think that they control us as the sand from the glass of life slides down the sides, but they don't. That only happens if we let them. We need to open our eyes to the reality that is happening in our everyday lives. There are 34,642 people in this city alone who don't have a place to call their own, yet we complain about the brand of our cars and the size of our homes. We won't even take one. One or more dollars out of our wallets and give them to someone outside our precious mall outlets. Out of those many, there are 5,536 plus children who stay up at night, crying and waiting for one single bite, yet we turn and hide our eyes, unwilling to accept that the person shivering in front of us is an actual human being. 5. 5 a.m. is the time that I received a suicide letter from a dear friend who thankfully decided that it wasn't the end, but how many people wait up at night with depressed thoughts and anxious cries, yet we bombard them with thoughts that it's all in their heads and we won't reach out and just do what Jesus said. We turn people down and push them out of our lives if they go against our opinions or our beliefs. But if Jesus could go into a town and mix himself in with unbelievers, then why shouldn't we? Yet we're too afraid to speak our mind because what? We might be shot down, teased, or ridiculed? Now, I don't know about you, but I'm thankful that God is the ultimate judge of our life. And no matter what we go through, our gains or our strife, he takes the aches that we leave at his cross and he blots our name out of the book that leads to fiery rocks, and I'm so thankful, because in reality, we all fall short. 807,361, that is the number of words written by our three in one, the Holy Father, the Spirit, and his Lamb of a Son, to spread his love and his grace in the time that he's allotted, because our name from that page of doom was blotted. I say this to you with one final plea. He gives you the verses 31,173. He commands you to go and spread his word with all your heart. No matter the person, the time, anything is a start.
So once upon a time, we had every episode do a little segment called Hope Speaks Louder. And the point of this segment was to bring on individuals who survived aerobics.
Stone with Our Conversation, and what we do is we travel around and pretty much do the same thing. We tell our stories and we talk about hope and healing, but I'm going to get into mine. Mine started, like a lot of people, I was raised in what would be considered the all-American Christian family, almost. I was raised going to church every Sunday morning, Sunday night, Wednesday night. We were actually the custodians of the church, so we were there like three or four other nights a week a lot of times. I was raised that, but I was raised it as a tradition, not a lifestyle. So that's just what our family did. It really wasn't who our family was. But I never really learned a backbone, really, during that time of what my faith really was. But for me, I started learning things about suicide and depression when I was as young as 7. Because at 7 years old, my grandmother tried 3 different times to kill herself. And I remember being 7, I didn't even really know what was going on, but just like going to the hospital to visit her after she had hurt herself. And I trying to figure out, you know, what what makes somebody hurt or feel that bad to want to hurt themselves? Well, went through different things in my life, you know, the kind of the average teenage life. But then when I was 17, my dad was killed in a random freak car accident where his truck randomly was up on a hill and the parking brake came loose and it rolled backwards over top of him. So it was just a really random, really weird accident. Well, to me, that accident ended like a lot of things about my faith, because I just relied on my family for my faith. I just relied on going to church with them and things like that. So that was gone. On top of that, not long after that happened, my mother then tried to kill herself. And during that time, we found her. She had overdosed on pills, and we found her, and we was able to get her to the hospital. And during that time, it was me and my younger brother, who was 15 at the time, just at the house. We're like, you know, like, can't figure out exactly what happened. We went from the all-American Christian family to a family that is literally just us two sitting in a house trying to figure out what's next. Well, I became extremely angry at God, extremely angry at everything, to the point that I tried to convince myself that there was no God, that tried to convince myself that if there was a God, he would never let us live like this. So I went through some time like that, and it made me a very angry, very depressed person. I would pick a fight. I would be angry with everybody. And you can't see this on here, but I'm 5'5", really small. There's a fight's not a good idea for me. I lost all of them. But I would do that. I would jump in and I would try, because I was just angry at everybody. You could say anything to me and I was angry at that time. But anger always leads to hopelessness, and it led me to a time where I just had nothing left, nothing to turn to, nowhere to go. So what I did after that, I remember a youth pastor that I had when I was a kid, he kept trying to talk to me and kept trying to talk to me, and I kept, you know, cussing at him. I kept running away from him, until there was one crazy day that he actually tackled me to the ground and sit with me and talk with me. Like, he made me listen to him. And he explained to me that God never wanted these bad things to happen to us, that he never wanted that to be our story. And that he actually had open arms ready to help us through whatever we're going through, and ready to give us that that fatherly hug to help us through. And when I fully understood his love, that he didn't cause the bad things, but he's ready to walk through the bad things with us, when I fully understood that, it changed me forever. But I didn't understand that exactly at that moment when I was being told. I kept going through depression. I kept going through thoughts of suicide. I didn't really understand his love until it was really a breaking point for me. I remember I was sitting in the basement of our house, and I had a loaded pistol at my head. And I'm not sure if I even fully understood that if I was even going to do anything or not. But I had that, and I had that thought of, man, this world would just be better off if I was gone. Like, because of anger, because of depression, I had left high school. So I was like, I'll never amount to anything. I'll never be able to do anything. So I might as well just end it. And then it was out of nowhere, sitting in the basement, I just felt just the presence of a hug while I was completely by myself. And I felt that presence, and it was like God was saying, I'm here for you, you know. Nobody else on earth may be right now, but I am. And when I fully felt that, I knew I had to live for him. I knew I had to completely turn things around and focus on God. So I'm not a type of person to really just like casually jump into something when I decide on it. So I automatically took off for India, and I ended up doing missions in India for 2 years, four different trips, 6 months each trip, where I worked with orphans, where I worked with sex trafficking victims, where I worked with kids that have been abused, molested, raped, all different types of things. I worked with that, and it just continued to show me that God's love reaches beyond anything that we can imagine. God doesn't cause the bad things to happen to us, but his love will meet us there. We make the decisions to cause bad things to happen, but God's love will meet us there. So I continued to do that, and then I came back home, and was looking for a career, and after a few different failed attempts, I ended up working at a group home back home now, where I work with, once again, sex trafficking victims here in America, and I work with abuse victims, physical, sexual abuse victims. And once again, I see the same things where God is redeeming every single one of their stories. So that's a lot of my story. I would love to meet all of y'all at an Hour Conversation event somewhere, anytime. And let's talk. I want to hear your story.
So I want to thank you for being vulnerable to share that, man. That's a heavy story. But I want to ask, if someone's listening to this right now, what advice would you give them if they are struggling? Like, why overcome?
Man, if you're struggling right now, seek God, because He loves you more than anything, anybody out there. He has the best for you. Seek God. Seek other Christians, real Christians, that will pray with you, that will stand by you through anything. I had a lot of so-called Christian friends, but when times got hard, they took off. Seek people that will completely stand by you and that will lift you up in prayer, and not just their best intentions. And if you can't find that, then, you know, search for it with all you have. Call somebody. Search for it. And look on Our Conversations post. Look on Victims and Villains. We can connect you with somebody, because suicide, depression, all that, it's real. And if you're going through that, don't go through it alone, because we've been there. All of us in Our Conversations have been there. We've all been to that point at some point in time. And we will happily walk you through it, because that's what God did for us.
All right, thanks, man. And please click the links in the descriptions below. If you guys have never heard of Our Conversation, go back and check out some of their past appearances on Victims. And Chris, again, thank you so much, man. Yeah.